two village idiots with a love-hate relationship.
See, you got fat.
See, you still look like a 15-year-old girl, but not hot.
Who can't stop arguing over Oklahoma sports.
You know what, man? Why am I still talking to you?
Come on, we were doing good there, man.
It's the Just Okay Sports Podcast.
Sooner Nation, Thunder Nation, we are back, and it is Beat Texas Week. It is Texas Hate Week here at Just Okay Sports. That is Just Oklahoma Sports. So, if you enjoy this time, please like, subscribe, all the stuff. Are we insiders? No. Are we reporters? No. Are we journalists? No. We're dudes who just get together and talk Oklahoma sports. That's what we do, and we're kind of idiots, so we're going to make you feel great about yourself. That's why it's Just Okay. I'm Daryl. That's my brother, Jared. What is up, Jared?
Man, not a lot, dude. I had a whole, I guess it's not really a Florida man story, but I had something interesting happen this morning, early. Yeah, I guess morning, technically. Before noon, everything before noon is morning, right? Like, I guess.
Everything so, before noon is morning, yeah.
So, this morning I got like a knock at my door, and it was the neighbor's guy that mows the neighbor's yard.
Okay.
And like, I have a privacy fence, right? Right. And then they don't have a privacy fence next door. Like, there's no fence. So he says that he found it that way this morning, which I find a little bit suspect that he just happened to find it, even though I let the dogs out like an hour before that and it was standing. But what I'm assuming happened is he was trying to mow next to my fence to get their yard. And I think his mower like hooked the fence panel that's at the end, and it knocked it over. And he's like, "Oh, I was just letting you know." And I was like, my dogs were just out there like an hour ago and it was fine. So it's like not a windy day. You know what I mean? So I was like, that's how I woke up this morning. I was like, bro. And then like, and he was like trying to be like, all like, well, I could like help you like put, and I was like, bro, like, I'm not going to like fight you over like, you should just do the right thing. Cause clearly, like, this did, like, I'm sorry. Like, this just doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? So, anyway, that's how I started my day. So,
nice.
Dealing with fin stuff. So,
always the best.
Yeah. So, always. But other than that, everything's good. It's Texas Hate Week, man. It's, it's Wednesday. So, we're, you know, a few days away from Beat the Hell Out of Texas Day. But, heck yeah. I'm ready. I'm so hyped. I went and, you know, let's just jump into it. One of my traditions, I'm going to tell you my tradition I have every year.
Yeah, we want to talk about this a little bit. And like, by the way, if you are watching on YouTube or listening on Spotify, we're like, leave some comments. Like, what's your tradition for this week? So hit us with yours, Jared.
So I think this one, like a lot of people have, so I'm just going to throw it out there. I think like a lot of people do this. I don't think it's special to me, but I wear OU stuff all every day of this week. From basically actually really from Saturday till Saturday, I'm wearing OU stuff because I'm wearing it for, I always do on game day anyway. But now this week it's like, dude, like I've been having like, I remember like I got all of my OU shirts out and like picked the ones out. Like, I'm not a very organized person, I'll be honest, but it's like, dude, I had this organized, like it's laid out, set, ready to go. So I wear OU stuff. But the other thing is I went to Publix today and I got me some hamburger meat because I always make a beef product.
Yes.
On game day.
Yes.
So Bevo burgers are going to be had. It's just going to be, I think two of my friends may come over, but it's like a maybe. But either way, it's like I'll eat like 10 pounds of Bevo burgers if we just absolutely annihilate them. So I don't care, man. I'll look like Jabba the Hutt on my couch. I don't care. I'm going to eat as much beef as I possibly can.
Love it. We do the same typically. You know, obviously there's some exceptions to the beef rule for us, you know, as far as like us cooking, like if the years we've got to go to the game, you know, we eat down there or whatever. We are traveling this year for the game, so that's a little frustrating, but it's fine. I mean, we've got the game time is blocked and ready to go, so we're good there. But I will be in Arkansas watching the game. So we'll see how that progresses and goes. But yeah, I'm an OU every day wear guy all through the week. I'm one of those as well. I'm a beef guy. I always, this is the other one. This is the one week that I make sure that I have all my stuff clean though by Saturday. Because for instance, when you're down 28-7 at halftime, and you've got to mount a huge comeback, I will change at halftime. Like, I will have backup plans clothing wise just in case.
So is that your superstition? You will change shirts if.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Things are going real. I'll change hats, shirts, socks, shorts, all kinds
of
things.
So I have a really weird one, I think. Well, I have a couple really weird ones. So one, I think this one's normal. I'll also change where I'm sitting on the couch, or like if yes. I'm sitting or standing, like, you know what I mean? Like my, where I am
yes.
has to change yes. depending on how the game's going.
That's your intro superstition. Like, right. Like I'm going to move to the couch. And if this doesn't work, then I got to get weird. Like with changing shirts and all the stuff. Right.
Yeah. My deal is I also will take my shoes off, or like if I'm wearing shoes, I'll take them off or put shoes on, you know, like it's a weird thing. But yeah, I'm like, and what's funny is, like, I've gotten to where I'm not that superstitious with other games. But, like, this is really, like, the big game. So, it's, like, the superstition's just held on. You know what I mean? Like, yes. I really don't get that superstitious about other games. But this one, it's, like, everything gets cranked to 11. Which, for us, for people that don't know, for us, I think it's, like, a little bit of that family factor. Because, like, for people that don't know, our whole, like, basically our whole dad's side of the family is Texas fans. Almost exclusively. Rats. There's grads for one.
Not just like that's the other side of it. They are grads. They are boosters. They are alum and hardcore like Longhorn fans. So it's all of it.
And there's like a couple of A&Ms sprinkled in there, but not a lot. But yeah, dude, it's like for us, it's like we have to amp it up because we used to go to the game every year basically, and we would have like a meetup, and so it was like. You were doing everything in your power. Like you had to feel like you were contributing because you knew if you left that game, if you left that stadium and you got your butt kicked, your family's going to let you hear. Don't get me wrong. I love our family is amazing. Oh, they're great.
Yeah, they're cool.
They're actually very gracious and stuff. I mean, they're going to talk a little smack. Like that's expected.
Yes.
But you know what I mean? There's not like any like animosity. But still, you're going to want to hear it. So you're going to, it's like you do not want to go through that.
Did I, by the way, speaking of this, just really quick. Somewhat proud dad moment and terrified dad. Did I ever tell you that at our grandmother's funeral that my son almost started a family feud?
Oh no, you did tell me this story, but you should tell us.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so our grandmother passed away. I believe it's been about 2.5 months ago or so now. Is that right?
Who was also, by the way, a massive Texas. She was a Texas grad and a Texas fan. She put the OU banner. The little pennant up in the cabin, which was like a huge thing for us.
That's right.
That was a huge thing. We were like, oh my God, she has one OU thing in the entire
house. We converted our grandma to what I think a lot of OU fans are with OSU. She could cheer for OU throughout the year, except for when we played each other. And then she was all in Longhorn. So anyways, so we go to her funeral. We're at the graveside. And if this will tell you about our family and their entrenchedness into Longhorn time. So they start doing kind of open mic time, right? With everybody saying, you know, and our grandmother's name was Hetty. You know, Hetty was this, and she was such a hard worker, and she was so gracious. She always held us. She was the glue, you know, all these things. And out of nowhere, our cousin/uncle says, and the other thing that we can't forget is that Hetty was a quintessential, amazing Longhorn, and does this my 11-year-old son, thank God, was out of the view of everybody else. As soon as he heard him say that and saw the horns go up, straight up goes like this on, and my wife has to be like, no, like you, like not now, like this is not the time,
right?
At all. I mean, it was I was amazed he didn't shout Texas sucks like really loud at the moment. So
yeah,
that's kind of the family dynamic that we run with. So this game even means a little more, I think, to us because of what can come out of that. So it's wild. But yeah, those are all, I think we're very in lockstep with that. But seriously, on Twitter, everywhere else, what are the superstitions? What are the traditions? But that's definitely some of mine. And I even every week, even though I say I'm not superstitious with every game, I drink the same coffee mug every game day. Like that's, I have an Oklahoma coffee mug every week.
I don't drink coffee. So I don't do that thing. But yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. I
drink the same NOS every
I don't drink Saturday. NOS either.
Ghost whatever. Energy, whatever. Maybe. That's right. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, there's a bunch of different traditions. And there's like things that I probably do that I don't even think about when it comes to this game, you know? So, you know, it's really funny. Cause like, I know you're going to like a wedding or something, aren't you? Isn't that where you're from?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because I had, I had a friend of mine and he was getting married and he was like, hey, he's like, they went to the venue or whatever that they really wanted to do it at. And his wife's like, well, they only have like this week or this other week. That's like, it was like 4 months later or something wild, you know, like way later. Yeah. And the first week was OU Texas. And he's like, absolutely not. And she's like, well, but I don't really want to fall wet. And he's like, no, absolutely not. We're not doing that. Like, and he's like, he's like, if we do that and we lose, he's like, you realize that our wedding will be tainted for the rest of our lives. Like, I'm not doing that. And I was like, yeah, I was like, you don't, this is why, like, I wouldn't get married in football season. Just because it's like,
and luckily the couple that's getting married, neither one of them care about OU per se. They're not like real fans. And Saturday is only the rehearsal and it's at 8 a.m. And if you've ever been to a wedding rehearsal, that's 45 minutes tops. We're done. I'm headed back to the Airbnb and it's game day. Game day is on from then on out. So anyways, but now the crazy and the other reason I think that we're all so tradition oriented or superstition oriented is because look, we're about to give you a bunch of stats and we broke down film. We've done all that stuff. It doesn't matter. Again, we say this, I think every year on the pod, the one and only time our dad's ever gone with us to OU Texas was the year that Texas started the season, I believe 1-4 or something crazy like that. Maybe 2-3. But I mean, it was even when we met up with our cousins who are diehards, they're like, God, y'all are going to kill us today. Like, this is going to be bad. This is going to be really, really bad. And we got run out of the freaking Cotton Bowl. I mean, oh my gosh, it was miserable.
And it's just like it was the same thing. My boy Brady, hopefully he's listening. He listens sometimes. He's actually an OSU fan, so I'm never taking an OSU fan with me again. but he went with me to the game 1 year, and we actually sat on the Texas side because one of our uncles had given me tickets on that side, and we were sitting in the upper deck, and we were like nosebleed, end zone, all that. And we got beat. I don't remember what the score was. It was like, it was pretty bad. Like they won by like 2 or 3 touchdowns or something. But yeah, it was again, one of those years you shouldn't, that they like on paper, OU was dominant in like every category. Yeah. So you have to throw all that out the window. You know, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I you don't. But, you know, again, I think all fans and then those of us that do things like this, it's part of our responsibility to try to look objectively at what could or could not happen. And then you just have to understand when the energy is as amped as a rivalry game is, and when it's a rivalry game that is split down the middle in a stadium 50-50, momentum means everything. Momentum and confidence is everything. And you don't have to look much farther back than 2 years ago. When Texas was rolling and then OU got to go in at half with momentum, and it just, that wave never stopped. It just kept rolling, and the Caleb Williams game happened. So it's there. So if you're a stat war kind of guy, college football graphs, advanced stats, preview, all those kinds of things, he does some different kind of analytics in the game. And look, I think it's fair to say, it's pretty dang even. Now, it's weird because he gives his win probability to 68% for Texas. And yet, it's like, for instance, in one category, which is his efficiency rate for rushing offense, he ranks us at 49th, and he ranks the defense of Texas at 5, right? So there's a lopsided there, right? But then you go down, and when you're talking about our defense in like points efficiency, so like our defense holding people to no points, he gives us a 3 rating, which is very high. He gives Texas an 89 rating on offense, right? So again, like a very lopsided category. But then there's others that are basically like, he gives us a 5, he gives them a 7, right? He gives us an 8, he gives them a 4.
Most outside of a few statistical things, it's pretty even across the board. Here's my thing, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because, you know, Texas fans have been like, well, who does OU played? And it's like, look, we know that we haven't played Bama. You played Bama and you beat Bama. However, yes. The more I see out of Bama, the more I'm like, not to say it's not an impressive win, it's more impressive than what we have on a resume. It's not like beating Bama last year. It's not like beating Bama. This is the worst Bama team
in a long time.
In the Saban era, for sure, in my opinion. Like, they have been really bad. And their defense, while the defense has been good at times, very, very inconsistent. Their offense is...
That's the thing. I was about to say, Bama is this. Honestly, the little bit that I got to break down the Texas-Bama game, and I've looked a little bit elsewhere, Bama's defense is actually really good, but the offense is so bad early in the season that it's when your offense can't score any points, one of two things happens. The defense just wears down, regardless of depth, and they can't keep up, or, right, they start to press because they don't trust the offense, and they give up a big play, and then boom, right? Then they're in trouble. So, and I think that's a little bit of what I saw watching them against Texas. So,
I'm just saying, like, I think really my point is, when you break down the ranking, they have Bama on their resume, outside of that, it's very, very close. And even really when you look at Bama's rankings and stuff, like I said, it's really not that far off just in total.
Right.
As an average.
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair statement. So, well, let's start breaking it down. Let's get into Texas and start with them. We talk about OU every week. I think if anybody's listening to this podcast, they kind of know where we sit with them. But Texas offensively, what do you see from them, Jared, as you kind of looked and dug into the numbers and even watched some tape? What do you see and what do you feel from them?
Offensively, you said?
Yes.
Well, I mean, look, Quinn Ewers has looked like a much better quarterback this year. They were even talking about, like, his fitness is better. He's much more mobile. He's just throwing, making better decisions. Ewers is something that I think is, I wouldn't even call him a weakness, but he was, you know, I don't know how to quantify him last year, but he was kind of that thing that was inconsistent, I guess, last year at times, you know, like he would just absolutely ball out, and then other games he would just disappear. This year he's looked pretty much on all year. So you're going to have to watch for Quinn Ewers, and I think he's mobile enough now that you're going to have to respect him in the running game. So you can't just bail out and leave him in the pocket. I think that overall, like, this team's got a lot of playmakers. Everybody knows Xavier Worthy. Xavier Worthy's basically every year he's been at Texas has balled out against OU. So I think, even though I think this year his season statistically isn't as going as well as what it has other years, I think it's one of those things when you look at it, it's like, I think they're just spreading the ball around more, right? Like, last year it was a lot of him kind of carrying the load, and this year there's more guys in that room that are showing up. And then you can't circle one guy on this team. So those are my big things. And then also, just the last thing that I'm looking for offensively is, like, at their offense, is they've got a really good offensive line. And I think that's going to be a test. This is going to be the test for the defensive line. And this is going to not only be a test for the defensive line, I think one thing that people aren't acknowledging, this is going to be a real test for the linebackers. I mean, Kanick and Stutzman are going to have a top-notch game. They're going to probably have to shed some blocks. Of guys getting into the second level and things like that. Like, it's going to be, this is going to be the gauntlet of the season right here in this one weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. Some of the things, by the way, I should have done this to kick it off. Some players, if you don't follow this and you're just kind of a Saturday weekend warrior, number 3, Quinn Ewers, the quarterback, obviously watch. Xavier Worthy is number 1. Number 13 is Jordan Whittington, who, by the way, when it comes to blocking downfield, that dude is a beast, and he opens a lot of things for them. Their running back that has kind of taken over on offense is Jonathan Brooks. And one of the big question marks going this game is Jatavion Sanders, who is their tight end. And he is a freaking freak of nature. I mean, he is long. I think he's 6'6", I believe, and can run like a deer. I mean, he is impressive. And if
Is it Whittington? Whittington's the one that's a transfer from Georgia, right? Am I thinking of that right?
No, that's A.D. Mitchell. Jordan Whittington's okay. He's been a Longhorn start to finish.
Yeah, you're right.
He's a very thick, strong-looking receiver. I mean, I just don't know how else to say it than that. Like, when he steps out there, he looks like an outside linebacker playing wide receiver. And he's got jets and can catch, really good, strong hands. But especially against Bama anyway, they did a lot of bubble game. I think there was one point where like 6 out of 9 throws were a form of a bubble, whether to a running back or receiver. They were just throwing wide and giving them a chance. And it was hilarious because Whittington was the blocker on most of those. And then they tried to throw one to him and let everybody else block. And it completely got blown up. It's like, let that man block. Like, let him do his thing. Right. So there's that. But here's the other things I noticed with them. And you mentioned Kanick. Kanick has to have a big game. Last week, he got thrown off big time because you're dealing with a team in Iowa State that does a lot of misdirection in the play itself, and then they also do a ton of shifting. If you really watch Iowa State, there's almost every play there's motion. And on most plays, there's two, right? Like a tight end moving from one side of the formation to another, then a running back coming out. Like they move pieces everywhere to confuse you, but also to get you to tip your hand. Okay. Well, Texas does the same. I mean, there is at one point, there were 8 straight plays with motion. I mean, they motion people all over. And dude, I'm not going to lie, some of the misdirection stuff they did against Bama was pretty stinking cool. Like they literally had a play, Jared, where they lined up Jatavion Sanders, and I don't know if it was technically an H-back or another tight end or what, but, you know, some kind of like wing player, and they pulled their tackle and then pulled those guys like they were doing a counter run to the left. They had 2 backs in the backfield. They fake it to one, so the back's coming, all the pullers are coming, and then out of nowhere, Jatavion Sanders and the H-back come, and they just stopped on a dime and turned and went the other way. And now they were actually going to block on the edge the other side. So it was like just all kinds of moving parts everywhere. And it went for a big gainer. They did a lot of that kind of stuff within the game. They do a lot of, in that game as well, pulling all the action, play action wise, to the left. And they actually do it in a way where Ewers actually turns. And so if his back is this, you know, one direction, he'll fake the handoff and then pull a complete 360 and turn and throw the bubble on the other side. So in other words, his back is to that side. He's not going to throw the ball that way. And then they do, right?
Right.
and then again, 2 plays later, he'll do that same fake handoff with his back that one way and then throw where his chest is instead. You see what I'm saying? So like, the dissecting of what's going on is going to be huge in this game.
This is going to be BV's defensive prowess versus Sarkisian's offensive prowess. I mean, in a huge way.
Well, yes, it is. But again, you're playing a first time starter. I would say it's going to come down to not just BV's prowess. I think his defense will be fine. I think he'll know how to get guys in position. Can Kanick see it fast enough? And I have a feeling, just like Iowa State did, Iowa State went from 98% zone to, you know, about 70% counterplay and gap scheme stuff, which threw Kanick off for almost a half.
Yeah.
And then he caught up. You can't do that this week. It cannot take you a full quarter to figure out where you're supposed to be. It cannot. If it does, the game's over. Like, it just is over, right? So that's number one for me. The other thing that they did that I think will be interesting, they mix tempo a lot. I mean, like even the broadcast, like start of the game, in a little bit of a huddle, sending signals in, just kind of taking their time, getting everybody where they want, motion here, motion there. And they did that for 5-6 straight plays. And then I don't know what their signal is for it, but bang, here we go. And they were in hyperdrive for like four plays and then slowed it back down again. And that really can mess with a defense. You kind of get in a rhythm of, okay, they're huddling, we have time to get our plays in, all that. And then all of a sudden they're up there and you got to be moving fast. So it'll just be interesting to see for the entirety of the game if the defense against their offense can lock into being basically, let's get the signal, get the call, and get there now, even when they're going slow. Like, they have to act on a fast tempo no matter what. Now, the other thing I'll say very quickly, and again, I did not get to watch every game. I watched the first half of the Bama game, and I peeked in a little bit on the Kansas game. They're not the greatest ball security team. They're really not. They actually had two different fumbles in the first quarter. They had, let me rephrase that. They had two fumbles that one got recovered by Texas. So Texas fumbled, recovered it. The other one, I would have called it a fumble. Instant replay said it was not a fumble and would have been like a 17-yard loss for Texas. And then Quinn Ewers threw a ball that a lot like last week where we saw Key Lawrence and we thought he was going to intercept it. And then out of nowhere, he just like his angle was just completely off. They had one of those. So there was three potential turnovers in the first 9 minutes of that game that did not go the other way. You're going to have to take advantage of those. And they're going to give you those chances. There was at least two chances in the Bama game for Quinn Ewers to be picked off. And they just did not take advantage. And then the calls just didn't go their way on the fumbles. So,
yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with all those. I mean, and it's going to be, they just feel like a team. I think you kind of highlighted it earlier. You were talking about it in our group text and stuff, like, and we'll talk about it a little bit more overall, but, you know, they're not that team. Like the culture definitely seems to be a little different in Texas. I'll give them that.
Yes.
It does. It definitely doesn't seem like a team that's like, well, we beat Bama, so we've arrived. You know, So anyway, that I think that there's going to be, like I said, that mentality of they're not, I feel like previous years, Texas would have had those issues and they would just been like, well, it's fine. We beat Bama. And then like it would have, you know, they would have collapsed later in the season. It seems like this, that's kind of something that they're still tightening the screws on and they're still working on, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, I would agree. All right. From a defensive perspective, couple of numbers for you to talk through. Texas is 54th in the nation in tackles for loss, and Texas is 49th in the nation for sacks per game. Okay, so neither great, but again, while Bama's not great, that's still a really good team, and I'm sure that that's skewing the numbers a little bit. Players to watch, Jalen Ford, number 41. Linebacker David Benda, number 33. Byron Murphy, defensive tackle, Devondre Sweat, 93, and Alfred Collins, 95. Those are the five to watch for sure on the defensive side. But all that said, defensively, Jared, what are you looking for and what do you see when you see Texas in this game?
I mean, look, they're in the trenches. They're really, really good. I mean, obviously on both sides, but their D-line is going to be you know, we talked about Cincinnati when we played Cincinnati, and this defensive line is way better than Cincinnati. So they could easily give OU's O-line fits. Like we've talked about how in the run game, especially they've struggled, and in the passing protection they've done well, but it's like they're going to get tested in both very heavily. So that's going to be something to circle. And then, like I said, they just feel like that defense that just flies to the ball. Like, you know, when you watch them, you know, again, something that we would see, you know, there's the, because it's Texas A, we go highlight it. When CeeDee caught that ball and there was five Texas defenders standing around him and he still ended up scoring a touchdown. You don't see that with this Texas team. Like this Texas team's not like that. Like if they're going to be swarming you and they're not going to just stand there idly, you know, watching you basically tiptoe into the end zone. I feel like they fly to the ball a lot more and they're a lot more team oriented. Like there's like I said, some of the games that I've watched, you know, when there was an interception or anything like that, or just a big play, there was always a guy there as backup. So it was like, it was going to be a big play regardless. So you're just going to see a lot of that, I think. And then honestly, just like, I feel like I think with this defense, I think that they're going to, saying those things, I think that they're going to really dial up. Like, this is going to be aggressive play call. I know that probably goes without saying, but I mean, like, I could see blitzes on a lot. Like, I could see, I don't know what percentage, but a higher than usual percentage of blitzing. Because, like we said, we've already seen plenty of times that they've, even in pass protection where there's miscommunication on the O-line, they let somebody right through, you know? And so I just feel like that's something that they're going to do. And I just feel like they are a little bit more aggressive inherently this year too.
Yeah. This game, in my opinion, will 100% come down to their defensive line versus offensive line. Versus our offensive line is what I'm trying to say. I think that that's the game, because I actually disagree with you in what I think Texas will do. I mean, if I'm Texas and I'm the D coordinator, watching how OU has struggled just to block in general, I'm putting 3 to 4 linemen down and saying, go to work. Now, I'm going to have a blitz package if that's not working, obviously. But my ultimate game plan would be the 4 of you wreak havoc. And honestly, they did that a ton against Bama. 4 guys down and go. They lined up in a ton of bare fronts. Now, sometimes that was with defensive ends, and sometimes that was with linebackers and safeties locked. But they'd put those 3 D linemen up and then have 2 more guys on the line of scrimmage on either side. And generally, 1 dropped and 1 came, right? So it was 3 and 4, and then dropping everybody else into coverage. I think that's what they'll do. That's what I would do. I would test this offensive line, and I would say, look, keep Dylan Gabriel in the pocket. Don't let him run. Make him make throws in the intermediate game. Make him stand in that pocket and see how comfortable he'll feel in this atmosphere. And we're just going to – I mean, if you can drop 7 guys into coverage to cover – 3 to 4 receivers, because that's the other thing too. You cannot play Austin Stogner in this game. Cannot. You play Austin Stogner in this game and a running back and 3 wide receivers, it's going to be 3-on-7. Literally every single receiver will be double covered, in my opinion. That's what I would do if I was Texas. I would just boa constrictor that whole zone back there and do the rest.
It sucks saying, because like I like Stogner a lot.
I do too.
It's just, yeah, he's a shell of his former self, you know. And I don't disagree with you. I just don't think he's a threat. I don't think we have a threat in the tight end room right now.
No. Now, in the red zone, I put him out there.
Yeah.
Right. I would still do that just because of his sheer size and height. I think you can do a few little pocket pass type things, you know. To him down there. But if it's not inside the red zone, he's not going to block anybody, and he's not a threat in the pass game to go get open for sure.
Can I just say one thing I don't want to see us do against Texas?
Yeah.
Is the Jackson Arnold power run game. Let's just not do that. Let's just not. How does that sound? Yeah. I don't understand it. I still to this day. I mean, I think there's going to be some crazy, you know, I even think that they may do like a little bit of that package. And then maybe have like some sort of double pass, or like they did the whole jump pass thing. You know, they may do something like that, but it's like overall, I don't want to see Jackson Arnold run up the middle, because especially against this defense, that he's going to get crushed. And our offensive line has not shown anything to make me believe that they're going to create a hole for him.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, if you are like do a zone read, right? Do a speed option, you know, like if you really want him in the game, you don't want him to throw. Do something like that and get him on the edges, right? Away from the middle, because that's their side, man. If you start doing this power run game and 320-pound D lineman guy lands on top of him and he's out, now you're going to be skittish to run Gabriel too, because now you can't lose both. The whole reason that Gabriel tries trucking people going in the end zone is because he knows that there's a fail safe if he goes out, which is kind of cool to see. But like, if that goes away, it's not there. But yeah, if I'm Texas, I'm just trying to slow us down with that, and I'm backing everybody else up, which, by the way, we'll find out more later in the week, but there are reports coming out that Ryan Watts, which, by the way, friend of the podcast, was on here when he was an OU commit before he decommitted, he may not play in this game. And that would be huge because he's a 6'4 corner that can run. And he would eat up some space. But that's what I'm doing if I'm Texas. I'm trying to limit the amount of blitzes I have to do. And I'm trying to force OU to patiently come down the field. And if they run the ball, I mean, if I'm a D coordinator with that line, I think I can stuff the run with four guys. I don't think that's hard.
Well, and I want to see, that's one thing I want to see. I know we're not talking about, I guess, OU's offense yet, but last week, Dillon had a little bit of that Baker vibe, that real little bit of a chippy, like, I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of that. I really wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of that from him. You know, I'd almost feel like I would want to see more of that than I did last week. I mean, look, I hate Texas with a burning passion. It's one of those things, like, I feel like, this is a comparison I made between, and this is going to enrage, I'm sure, some fans, but like the difference between Oklahoma and Texas's rivalry, where there's like a, like, yes, we hate each other to like a crazy extent. Like, we can still like not, like, we can tip the cap and be like, you're a good team, right? Like, at the end of the day, you're good. Especially like in the early 2000s, it was like that, you knew that that game was going to determine who was fighting for a Big 12 title or who was going to go to a national title. So you had to respect that they were a good team, you know? And it's like, I feel like, you know, it's so funny to me to see all these, like, the, I'll just say Big 12 schools. I'm not going to highlight anybody, but they're all like trying to trash OU still. And, oh, we're going to be glad you left and all this. And it's like, bro, like, we have a mutual respect. Texas is a good team, guys. Like, Texas is a team. You're going to have to respect them. Even if the score somehow was like, you know, 60-14 or whatever, doesn't mean that they're a bad team. It's just, that's how this game goes sometimes. That's this game sometimes has that weird, we've been there. If you've never been to the game, like, this is one of those,
oh my gosh,
that doesn't mean, if you ever want to get into college football, if you're ever taking somebody and you want to get them into college football,
take them to this one.
OU, Texas, Ohio State, Michigan, the Iron Bowl. Like, this is one of those, like, Mount Rushmore, you know, college football rivalry type games. Like, this is one of the top five for sure. To me, it's obviously the top. But anyway, there's just, there, when you go to that stadium and you're sitting in the stands, there's that, like an energy, I guess. I don't know. It's like a very different experience than being at a game anywhere else that I've ever been.
Well, and it's, again, it's the split. That's what I think that OU or Ohio State, Michigan might be one of the greatest rivalry in college football just because of its age and all. But like, it's one thing to go to an Ohio State Michigan game and it's just nothing but Ohio State fans. But when you go to this one and it's split down the middle, that atmosphere is completely different. It's just on a different level. But let's keep it breaking this down so we can get through this thing and keep people from falling asleep. Going to OU side of things, Jared, just real quickly, offensively, defensively, what's your game plan? What do you look and expect OU to do from both sides of the ball to attack Texas?
Well, I think offensively, I'm hoping, like, this is, I guess, my hope. This is what I think they need to do. They need to establish a running back. Like, Marcus Major to me has been serviceable, but I don't see how he's established himself as like a full-time back, I guess you'd say. So like, I want to see maybe a little bit of Towie. I want a little bit of Sawchuck. Like, you're going to have to do something to get the running game going, because that's going to predicate you being able to throw the ball downfield. So I want to see us do a little bit of something with that. And I want to see us have a little bit of that grit, I guess, along the offensive line that we just haven't seen. Like, I want to see, like I said, I honestly, my honest opinion is Rame is physically able to do what he needs to do. He hasn't had that dog in him, so to speak. So I want to see a little bit of that. And then defensively, it's going to be basically do what you've been doing and play Texas like you've played every other team, you know, for most of the quarters that you've played, right? Outside of a quarter against Iowa State and a quarter against Tulsa. You've shut everybody down. You've kept everything in front of you. You know, the one thing that they're going to have to do, because like you said, Texas uses that bubble screen a lot. They use a screen game a lot. And OU's done a very, very good job this season of shutting that down. They get off the corners are getting off blocks. I mean, it's just they're getting downhill. And they're going to have to do that. And they're going to have a bigger challenge than they've had all season in doing that. But like I said, they're gonna have to keep everything in front of them, and they're gonna have to, like you said, when you get those plays where you have the ball that's lofted up in the air, you got to play that ball. Like, you got to make that play, because that one play can swing the entire momentum of the game.
Yes.
And so, I mean, those are the things. Like, really, it's like, I feel so, this is, oh my God, this feels weird to say being an OU fan. I feel so much better about the defense than I do the offense. You know, the defense is just like, literally do what you do. Just turn the dial a little bit more, right? Like, you're just going to have to play a little bit better. And then the offense, it's like, okay, you've got some things you need to figure out. So that's where I'm at. I mean, I think the defense is going to be, if they play like they have been, I think it's going to be a solid game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, Cincinnati game, I think, is the game plan here, right? I was actually shocked in the Cincinnati game how much blitzing we did, because I kind of expected them to sit back a little bit more and try to keep Emory Jones in the pocket.
Right.
And instead, dude, they were bringing stuff from everywhere. They blitz safeties, they blitz corners, they blitz one linebacker, two linebacker. I mean, they brought stuff from every angle, from every coverage. I think that's what you have to do with Quinn Ewers. You've got to get him uncomfortable and try to get him to force a ball up. I don't know what his numbers have been through the rest of the season. This was kind of fascinating. During the Bama game, from the 2022 season through the Bama game, he was only completing 22% of passes over 20 yards. That was on the screen during the Alabama game, which I thought was a very interesting stat. Now, what's funny is he threw a ball where he totally missed a guy wide open, and it should have been an interception that, again, the safety misplayed. But then the next deep ball they threw was great coverage, and freaking Ewers dropped a dime. I mean, way down the field for a touchdown. It was wild. So I don't know what we'll see there. But yeah, defensively, man, confuse him, move stuff around, and make him make a mistake, right? And keep shutting down the run game like you have all year. I think that's the blueprint on that side of the ball. On the offensive side, I mean, I think the offensive line's the key. There is nothing in me that believes we're going to have a run game. And so, unfortunately, to me, it's going to be wide receivers get open, get yards after the catch. So establish the passing game to soften the box, and then you're going to have to come back. But the run game, to me, is going to have to be an accent of the offense, and they need to throw. And again, that's why I don't play Stogner very much in this game. I want and last thing I'll say very quickly, and I said this the other day, play your best players. Play your best players. Play Nick Anderson a lot. Play Jaden Gibson a lot. Play Drake Stoops a lot. Play Farouk a lot and Andrell Anthony a lot. Gavin Freeman, I love you. I love the story. Put him out there some, but he should not get the majority of the snaps. LV Bunkley Shelton should not get a majority of the snaps, right? Like, it needs to be those guys getting the majority of the snaps. At running back, I don't know what to think. If you ask me this from a pure talent level, I'm starting with Towie. And if Barnes is healthy, I'm going Barnes. And personally, after that, it's Caleb Hicks. Because I think Caleb Hicks, honestly, is the best combination, even though he's had like two carries the entire season. He is the best combination of power and speed you have of both of those things. Like, but do not just keep playing older players for the sake of playing older players. Don't do it.
That actually reminded me of one other thing, too, that I want to highlight. Dylan Gabriel's deep throw passing needs to be more consistent. I don't know how to say it, because it's not been bad, but like, he's had those throws where he's gotten away with it like several times.
Yeah.
Like, there was the play against Iowa State where he underthrew the guy by 15 yards and he had to come back and get the ball. And
yeah, Brennan Thompson's ball. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, if you throw that against Texas and they have an athlete that can even halfway pay attention to the ball, that might be an interception.
Yeah.
You know, so there's some things like that that I think he's going to have to be a little bit better, because that's just one thing to me. That's one part of his game. And this isn't me calling for Jackson Arnold. This isn't me bashing Dylan Gabriel. I'm just saying Dylan needs that. That's the one part of his game that I think still has that little bit of inconsistency, while everything else has been dialed up a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, I'm down with that. And back to the best player deal, same on offensive line. If Caden Green is your most talented guy, put him in there. Go ahead.
If you're Bill Beatonbow for a day, who you putting in your starting five?
Oh, I think I said this the other day. For me,
I just didn't know if it had changed since Iowa State or, you know, recent.
No, I mean, I would put Rouse. I would put Bird or Green, depending on who's practiced the best out of those two on the left. I'd put Troy Everett at center. I would actually move Jacob Sexton to right guard and play him at right guard. And I would play Guyton at right tackle.
Yes, yeah, I don't have any problem with that.
That's what I would do. Now, I understand that Sexton's coming off the injury, so maybe that's the issue or whatever. But again, I don't want to crap on the guy because, man, when you listen to his interviews, he's dialed in. He is prepared. His mentality is great. And I'm talking about McCade Matower, man. Like, this is what's crazy. I'm going to say both things. I don't want to see McCade Matower play very much. And at the same time, I want that dude on every team I ever coach.
Yeah.
Like both are true.
You're cheering for him harder than you're cheering for maybe anybody else on the offensive line, but you also don't want to see him play on the offensive line.
Yes. 100%. And against the talent that we're about to see, I mean, again, like we've seen 5 weeks of the same two guys getting knocked off the ball. It's time to move some things around where that's not happening anymore.
I just to wrap this up, too, because it's like we're talking about these things, and you know, I think you have those guys like Cade that are show a little bit of that culture shift, right? Uh-huh. Even at OU, and we've seen a culture shift at Texas.
Yeah,
it's like really this could be the first year of us getting back to the early 2000s levels of Texas. Yes. OU Texas.
Yes,
so I agree. This is going to be I'm the more nervous, but I'm more excited also to watch this game than I have been in 10 years, maybe. I don't know. A long time.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I did. I talked about it in Discord today. You know, I feel like every OU fan, even this year, has kind of been hanging the hat on, well, if things go really well for Texas, they're going to not handle success and they're going to fall apart because that's what they do. Well, I don't believe that that's true. I mean, listening to those interviews of those players today, I got to listen to about 5 of them, and dude, they're dialed in. They know. I mean, to hear them say, like, you know, this team hasn't really played anybody, they're like, it doesn't matter. They're 5-0. Like, they like put every reporter in check. They are 5-0. They got something going over there. And they know that we blanked them last year. They're going to come for blood. We have to play our best game. Like, that has not been the demeanor of past Texas teams at all. They were asked several times, hey, you guys got more first place votes in the AP top 25. How does that feel? They're like, it doesn't matter. Like, who cares? Like, it's just like, what is happening? Like, it's a different level. So last thing on this game, Jared, for you, what are the 1 to 2 things OU has to do to win this game?
Oh man. I think they've got to get pressure on Ewers. I mean, I think that they've got to dial up something somehow, whether that's bringing blitzes or whatever, some, you know, weird stunts or motion or whatever it is, confuse him, like you said, but they've got to get pressure on him. They cannot let him feel comfortable because he has weapons. And, you know, if you let him sit back there with any amount of time, then he's going to pick you apart. And I think, you know, the other thing is, like I said, just defensively, it's like, just do what you've been, or, you know, I mean, just overall, like I said, just do what you've been doing. But then offensively, it's like, in the same sense, do what you've been doing in executing your game plan and all that. Like, outside of SMU, like, call a good game, Lebby, for God's sake. But if you do that, it's just execute. Take the ball. Like I said, this is going to be the biggest game of Dylan Gabriel's career, in my opinion.
Yes.
This one specifically, not just the OU Texas game in general. This one is going to be his most, because this is going to show people whether some of those things we've been griping about, well, he doesn't throw across the middle of the field, or, you know, he's waiting. Like, even, you know, we've seen some deep balls where he's waited a little too long. And it's like, well, against a team that's more athletic like Texas, you can't do that. Like, you have to throw in a much narrower window. So Dylan's going to have to play his best game in an OU uniform this weekend. And I'm going to need him to see him utilize every portion of the field, the middle, the outsides, throw to guys open and connect deep balls and all those things. Like, he's going to have to be, like I said, this is going to have to be the game of his career in college.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with those things. I mean, this probably goes without saying, but still, this OU team on both sides of the ball, I would say this. What OU has to do to win this game is they have to come into this game and play with absolute violence. I mean, there needs to be zero question about whether or not OU is going to bring a knife to a gunfight for four quarters. And literally, that needs to be their mentality, that Texas has got Uzis everywhere and they're coming in with pocket knives and they do not care. Like, that has to be the mindset and the mentality of it all. I think defensively, instead of like a player or a scheme, I would say this. It is simply dissecting all the changes. Just know your job, know where your eyes need to be and what it is that you need to discern, and don't get caught up in, like, as they like to say, all the window dressing. The moving this way and that way, just see what you need to see and follow it and trust it, and you'll be fine on the defense. On offense, again, I just don't believe we're going to have a run game. So I'm going to say receivers, you have to get yards after catch. And that kind of ties in with Dylan Gabriel. Dylan, you have to put the ball in such a way that our guys can catch it and go, period. Like, they have to be able to catch and go to win this game. So that's that. So it's kind of the game. And then OU fans, man, make it uncomfortable in that place, man. Get down there, get rowdy, get loud. Like, this should be a fun game. It's game day. Mm-hmm. It's all the stuff. And I'm really bummed that we can't be there this year, but that's the deal. We'll give our scores here in a minute and kind of our confidence in the game with everything. So let's move on to picks very quickly as we are wrapping up. It is college football week number 6. I've got some games here for you, Jared. Let me know what you are thinking. Let's start in the SEC. LSU at Missouri. LSU -5.5. Who you taking?
Gonna take LSU.
Ooh, really?
I'm cheering against it. The Missouri fan base has been the most, like,
oh my gosh, yeah,
obnoxiously. Like I said, I told you about the guy on the plane that was like, well, we should be competing for national championships every few years. And I was like, bro, yeah. I don't know what football you've been watching, but.
I agree. I want LSU to run them off the field. Although the problem is LSU's defense has not looked very good at all. And I feel like that's the one thing that has been pretty good for Missouri has been their offense with Luther.
Which this is like that's a battle of coaches we just don't like too. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, it's so true. It is so true. Washington State at UCLA. UCLA is a 3-point favorite. So that's Washington State at UCLA is a 3-point favorite. I'll go first on this one. I'm actually going to take Washington State. I think that their defense is for real, and I think it could give some problems and keep them in that game.
I'm going to go UCLA, just to go a little different, but I do think that they're going to, I do like what Chip Kelly's doing there. So I think I'm going to go with him.
Okay. Fair enough. How about this one? It's the time for Nick Saban versus Jimbo Fisher. The feud is back. Bama at College Station A&M. The line is a whopping 1.5 for A&M. They are a 1.5 point.
That's wrong. You wrote that wrong. Oh, it's 1.5. Oh,
sorry. Bama. Sorry. Bama is the 1.5 favorite. I apologize. Yeah.
It
is.
I'm going to take Bama. I mean, I know that they have problems with their QB and all that sort of stuff, but man, I can't even cheer. What is it, a weird time in our lives where I'm cheering for Bama and not A&M? I don't know. Anyway, that's like a hope. That's a hope pick. I'm going to go Bama. I'm going to go Bama just because I want A&M to get crushed.
I'm going Bama as well.
If there's a team, if there's a defense in the SEC that's going to make Bama's QB room look good, it might be Texas A&M. So,
yeah, maybe so. They are one of the top leading teams for tackles for loss, though, there at A&M. That's the only thing that gives me pause, but I just believe that Bama's going to find a way in that one. All right, another good one in the SEC, Kentucky at Georgia. Kentucky at Georgia. Georgia is a 15-point favorite over Kentucky. Where are you going, Jared?
Well, I'm going to take Kentucky to cover, cuz I don't believe in that Georgia defense. Georgia offense, sorry. So that's, I think, okay, they'll cover. Yeah.
Wow. Dang it. I am too. That I just knew.
So right now Georgia. all of our picks are the same except for the Washington State UCLA game. So
that is correct. This is just awesome. All right, how about Central Florida at Kansas?
Let me turn it down so none of my neighbors don't hear me and come knock on my door.
Kansas is a 1.5-point favorite, and I will go first on this one so you can decide what you want to do. I'm going Kansas all day. I think Daniels is back and playing this week from what I've heard. And I think that that's a difference maker for them. So I think that they're going to be coming off a big loss to Texas, mad, and they get their quarterback back, and I think they cover.
I'm going to take UCF. I think they had a tough time last week, tough loss. And I think they're going to come out a little angry. And I don't know, even if Daniels plays, I think he's a little fragile at this point. So I think he's one hit away from being out of that game.
Interesting. Okay. And the last one, the most important one, OU Texas. Texas is favored by 6.5. They are favored by 6.5. Jared, what are you picking and what is your score?
Oh, man, I'm going to have to do some advanced calculus and think about it. No, give me the Sooners, baby. Give me the Sooners.
Wow.
They're going to win. Not only that, they're going to win by 2 TDs.
Wow. Do you have an actual score or just two? They will win by 2 touchdowns.
I will do. They're going to win 31-17.
Wow. Okay. That's impressive. I can't believe that I'm about to do what I'm going to do. It breaks my heart, but it's going to happen. I'm picking Texas. I think Texas is going to win the game. I think that in the trenches, they have us. And I think especially for the offense, I think that they are going to stall our offense out. Our defense is going to play great. And then somewhere near the end of the third quarter, fourth quarter, they're just going to start to break because they can't win it by themselves. That's what I think is going to happen. I do think it's a lower scoring game than most think, because I think both defenses are actually pretty good. But I am going to take Texas at 27, OU 17. That's where I'm at.
Okay, so Daryl's starting his Texas podcast, I think, next week is what I heard.
Oh, my gosh, dude. I mean, I don't want to pick it. If our offensive line had improved at all, I would be maybe going the other way, but I think that that is literally the difference in the game.
Again, just to reiterate for audience, for both of you listening, everything goes out the window in this game. Everything goes out the window.
Yes.
So it, like I said, if somebody came to me and was like, I'm from the future and the score tomorrow is 77-0, I'd be like, okay. Like, I can't argue
possibly.
That.
Possibly. Yeah.
So,
I mean, let's be real. In 2000, I was watching that and listened to Bob and some guys on the radio today. And he was like, it was Trent Rattery. That's who it was. Trent Rattery and Bob and those guys were on the radio and they were like, man, we hadn't played well leading into the Texas game. Like, we really, like, we had struggled. And like Bob even talked about, he said, we got up 42-17. I got on the radio and went, guys, we're pretty good. Like, yeah. That was the first moment they thought that, like, and again, anything can happen in this game. Like, there have been some weird, weird things go down in this game. But if I'm looking at it objectively, I just don't believe that we have more talent in the trenches. And that's where ball games are won.
And can we just say, we haven't even mentioned this. There's a chance that we see Texas again in the Big 12 championship game.
Yes, there is. And we'll wait till after the game, see where everything is as far as what the, because the tiebreaker this year for the Big 12 is very strange. And it's going to be an interesting, I still believe that those two teams should play each other at the end, but there's actually a chance that they don't. And that is going to be fascinating to see how that goes and how that plays out.
I just don't see anybody else in the Big 12 that's could run the table.
I don't think it will be either. But what I think is, I think there could be 3 to 4 teams that have one loss. That's what I
but think. That's what I'm saying. I don't see anybody that could, I don't see anybody else that could have one loss even. UCF maybe, but they've already got their one loss against a bad Baylor team.
Yep.
West Virginia, I think, is undefeated right now in the Big 12.
K-State has a loss outside the Big 12, right? So they would be the other one. I mean, K-State's one team I'm looking at. I think Cincinnati has a slight chance. Or no, they've already lost again. They've already lost their second.
Yeah.
UCF is one that they already have their loss, but if they keep going, you know, and then look, Kansas lost to Texas. I mean, is it crazy to think that OU could win on Saturday and then Kansas come back and beat OU?
So here's the rankings right now, just so you know. So I want you to give me real quick as we wrap this up. Okay. You got OU and Texas undefeated. The only other undefeated team in the conference is West Virginia and Kansas State.
Yeah.
So, and then you have Kansas with one loss, BYU with one loss, TCU with one loss, Baylor with one loss, Iowa State with one loss, and Texas Tech with one loss. And I guess Oklahoma State with one loss, even though they've only played one and they lost it.
BYU is another team to watch for.
So UCF has actually 0-2 in the Big 12. UCF is.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Because they lost to Cincinnati and they lost to Baylor.
Yeah, that's very true.
I think it was Cincinnati, maybe. I don't know. We're just okay. I don't remember. Baylor and Kansas State is Baylor and Kansas State. Sorry, Cincinnati game was last year. So, like I said, you're really looking at right now, I know this is way early in the season, but you're looking at West Virginia, Kansas State, Kansas, BYU, TCU, Baylor, Iowa State, and Texas Tech. Those are the teams that like technically still could, but it's like Texas Tech has not played well. Iowa State has not played well. Baylor has not played well. Nope. TCU has not played well. BYU is like an unknown quantity, but I don't feel like they've played great. And Kansas is highly dependent on Jane Daniels playing. So like you said, and then West Virginia, I just don't know. Like it's hard to look at West Virginia and be like, that's not fool's gold, right? So far, because...
Yeah, but they're always good defensively. I mean, again, they're going to be able to keep themselves in games.
I guess my point is you have OU, Texas, West Virginia, and Kansas State. So Kansas State, maybe.
Well, and again, I've got to go back and read it, but it's a weird. It's basically the common opponent. If it's not head to head, then it's the highest ranked common opponent the two teams have played, and whoever beat that highest ranked opponent goes.
The Big 12 has got it. I'm so glad we're leaving this poverty conference. Anyway,
but you see what I'm saying? So like, again, if OU,
I wouldn't be surprised if Brett Yormark's like, okay, so we're going to do a coin flip on whether OU is going to get in it. Heads, the other team wins and tails OU loses. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah. I mean, it's a weird tiebreaker though.
Yeah. That's one question real quick to wrap things up.
Yeah.
How's the Big 12 officiating going to handle this game? Are they going to just,
okay. When I really believe that there's a Big 12 conspiracy, here's what I believe. It is going to be nothing but penalties everywhere. Every little hold is going to be called just so they can say we called 75 holds on the team that you guys played against them. And it's going to all be in this game. And here's the other thing. It will make this game unwatchable. So then the Big 12 will be able to say, no one even really watched that game. Yeah. Because it was so terrible.
And Brett Yormark's not going to be there.
No.
And the SEC commissioner is going to be there. So, interesting game.
Is that a fact?
I'm pretty sure that they confirmed he's going to be there. Yeah.
Are you serious? Mm-hmm. I had heard that getting floated around like as a joke, but surely not.
Let me see if I can find it. I'm pretty sure.
I've heard a bunch of people joking about that. How cool it, like, I heard it on the radio today. They were like, the game picker, like the picks guy for game day should be Greg Sankey. Like, how awesome would that be? That Yoermark.
I've read something that sounded legit. Maybe it's a joke and it went over my head.
I think it's more joking. I really do. But if you tell me that Greg Sankey is confirmed to be coming.
No, this is from On Three. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey to attend final Big 12 Red River Showdown between Texas and Oklahoma.
Wow.
That's from On Three. So they're reporters. We're not. So I'm going to go with that's. And see, yeah. And then Brett Yoermark said that's his future. He should support them.
Wow. That's amazing. So that is amazing.
It's gonna be, dude. I'm ready. I'm ready, dude.
Okay. Last thing, and then we're gonna stop because we could talk OU Texas forever. I am of this opinion. I don't know what you think. We have not talked about this at all, but this is my opinion. Okay. Do not chant SEC. Do not chant SEC. I am not. No.
I'm for it.
Oh my God.
I'm for it, dude. I'm sorry. Screw the Big 12, Brett Yoermark. Like the officiating was like the straw that broke the camel's back for me against Cincinnati, where I just was like full in on the conspiracy train to the point where I'm like, dude, screw the Big 12. And then like the fact that every team, for some reason, the most lacking of self-awareness of your two ranked teams right now are leaving your conference and y'all are still like, we're glad y'all are leaving. Like, shut up. You're not. Like, this conference is going to be a joke once we leave.
Yes, I mean, I agree with those things, but
let me ask this real quick, just to get why the SEC. Look at the SEC, or look at the the roster of teams that are gonna be in the Big 12. Outside of like Colorado and Kansas State, who's gonna be a team that you think is gonna be ranked and can make noise?
Utah.
Okay, Utah is a good choice, but still.
I honestly believe if Leipold stays at Kansas, Kansas is going to be pretty dang good.
But which one of those? Here's the question I think nobody's asking. Which one of those? Utah might be like, I don't think it's a blue blood, but like Utah's got that following of a blue blood. BYU does a little bit because of the whole Mormon church thing.
Right.
But like outside of that, you look at that and it's like they're not really like every one of those teams, if you ask me, is like they're a bad season away from their viewership dropping through the floor, right? Like even UCF, I'll say it. I live in Orlando. I can say it, whatever. If UCF had a 3-9 season or whatever, nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to watch the games. Nobody's going to.
Yeah, but I think that's 99% of fan bases. That's not the question is do they have teams that can be competitive consistently? And yes, I think Kansas State can. I think Kansas can. I think Utah legitimately could be the new OU of the Big 12. And then we'll see what Dion does. But I mean, he's done more this year than I thought he would do.
I'm telling you, and this will be my last thought, Dion at Colorado. I know people like this is a polarizing thing. I know we're tired of talking about Dion. Give him another. I'm going to be anxious to watch him next year. If he can go and recruit and hit the transfer portal and he can sell. Yeah. I need some guys in the trenches. Like, that's what he's missing. Like, honestly, if you watch their games, he probably, like, even against Oregon, like, honestly, it's like if Shedeur Sanders isn't getting smoked in the backfield after like 2 seconds, that might actually be a game. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. USC, it's like, dude, USC, if they had a competent offensive line, they'd probably come back and win that game. Just saying.
Yeah, so maybe.
I'd buy Colorado stock, is what I'm saying. As much as
I mean, again, he's done more than I expected. It's been pretty good. So we'll see. But, well, we are split on this pod. Jared has taken OU. I have taken Texas, as much as that pains me. But if I'm being honest, it's just where I'm at. But I obviously will be rooting that I get to come on here and say I was an idiot. That's my hope. That's what I want to see.
You're going to do that anyway. I just need Troy back to give me backup on it.
Fair enough. So... We will see when the review of the Texas game happens, because it might happen right after the game. I may just take all my stuff with me in case we win, that we just get on right then and just live stream it, go nuts, and let people get in the comments. So
I'll have to be like rearranging my entire house, because I'll probably, if we just blow them out, like every like thing in my house will be flipped over from excitement. Like,
yeah, I may be paying a huge fine to the Airbnb we're staying at if we pull this one out. So anyways, but that's the deal. It is Hate Texas Week. Hey, don't forget to keep dropping your Sark comments on there. It's horns down no matter what. I don't care if I picked them to win. I hate them. I hope. And I really hope that it is an embarrassing day for them all the way. That's the way it goes.
Hey, and you know what? At the end of the day, Baker's going to have more Big 12 championships than they do total.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that, but that was a line. Yeah. It's amazing to know I will have more Big 12 championships than they will. Holy crap. That was, if you can't find it, it's Baker Mayfield with Rich Eisen. Rich Eisen interview, and he said, what is amazing to know is I will have more Big 12 championships than Texas does. Like, bang. Drop, you know, mic, done.
Hey, just throwing it out here, we need to tag Baker in this and be like, hey, Baker, you can come on the pod and just rant about how much you hate Texas for an hour, and we'll sit silently. We don't even care.
Yes.
We'll give you 100%, a platform.
100%. So, man, that's all we've got. We're having a great time. We hope you are, too. I'm Daryl, that's Jared, and we will talk to you guys later.
Bye, Baker.
Cha-ching, a Thunder Moneyball!
And you can unhitch the wagon, put the ponies in the ball.